From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, we're going to do a quick feature. We Don't Die, our featured podcaster. And later on tonight, of course, cover up at Roswell. Don Schmidt joins us. Here's what's happening. It's tense. Russia has said it will treat U.S. warplanes operating in parts of Syria where its air forces are also present as targets amid a diplomatic row caused by the downing by us of a Syrian jet. The country's defense ministry said it would track U.S.-led coalition aircraft within missile systems and military aircraft, but stopped short of saying it would shoot them down. Meanwhile, we have told our pilots, defend yourself. Since 2003, when we entered Iraq, of course, under the auspices of weapons of mass destruction, which, were never found, more than 4,500 American military personnel have died fighting in Iraq. But the war embattled country itself, more than 180,000 civilians are documented to have died from January 1st of 2003 through 2016 as a direct result of the ongoing fighting. That could be much higher as well. But back to Syria, let's check in with Dr. Jerome Corsi. Things are tense out there, Jerry.
Very tense, Georgia. This incident today, a downing of the Syrian jet, really escalates the tension between the United States and Russia. We are both, the United States, Russia, and Syria are all operating aircraft in the war right now in Syria. That's an expanded war, which expanded from Iraq and Afghanistan. So now Syria is probably the hottest spot and the most dangerous spot in the Middle East.
Jerry, also there's a story about Kim Jong-un. He's petrified of traveling around. He's getting into different cars. He's sneaking around at dawn. He's afraid we're going to take him out. I guess that's pretty justified, isn't it?
Well, especially after, you know, the death of this young man who was held hostage, you know, in prisoner.
Horrible story.
It's a horrible story. Comes back brain dead. It's a tragic, tragic story. And then dies. I think we still have forces around North Korea. And President Trump has not withdrawn any of the threats to intervene militarily. And as again, North Korea, I think we're making an effort with the Trump administration to work with China to try to contain North Korea. And for a while, that's quieted down. But this death of this prisoned student being released has really upped the tension again in North Korea.
It does. Hold on, Jerry, because we're going to come right back to you to talk more about just what's happening in Russia, in Syria, with the United States, and the situation in North Korea. Stand by, Jerry Corsi from Infowars.com. Nearly an hour has passed before the crew of a container ship reported its collision with a U.S. destroyer, according to the Japanese Coast Guard, raising more questions about the sequence of events that ultimately led to the death of seven American soldiers. Please say a prayer for their families and for them. Of course, the 10,000-ton USS Fitzgerald, that was the name of the destroyer, and the ACX Cristal, a 29,000-ton container ship flagged in the Philippines, collided early Saturday local time off Japan's peninsula. The area sees heavy maritime traffic, with 400 to 500 vessels crossing it daily. As a matter of fact, tomorrow during our news segment, Captain Kelly Sweeney joins us to talk about just how a collision like this could occur. Now, ironically, the name of our destroyer, the USS Fitzgerald, think about 1975 when the Edmund Fitzgerald sank in Lake Superior. 29 crew members died in that mishap. The American college student Otto Warmbier only intended to spend 5 days sightseeing in North Korea in 2016. Instead, he spent 17 months there in detention, where his family believes he was tortured into a coma. Today, less than a week after returning to the United States with severe brain damage, his family has announced that Otto had completed his journey home. The 22-year-old died, as Jerry Corsi just said, in Cincinnati, Ohio, with his family at his side. What will be our reaction to this? How will we handle this? We shall see. By the way, we're sending prayers to Coast AM guest Jim Mars. He's dealing with some major health issues. He's getting through them each at a time. Say a prayer for Jim. We will update you in the very near future. And he wanted to dispel any rumors about his condition. He talked to producer Tom Danheiser today. Jim Mars, fighting strong, and we'll get you an update as soon as we can. A federal judge has issued a bench warrant for a self-proclaimed psychic and remote viewer from Hermosa Beach, California, who skipped his scheduled sentencing hearing in a tax fraud case. 58-year-old Sean David Morton and his wife were convicted in April of multiple counts of conspiring to defraud the Internal Revenue Service by passing bogus checks and bonds, they say. As a result of the scheme, the IRS erroneously issued a refund of $480,000 to the couple. Prosecutors are expected to recommend a prison sentence of more than 7 years when Morton, who is representing himself, failed to appear. The U.S. District Judge Stephen Wilson has issued the arrest warrant forthwith. A sentencing date in Los Angeles federal court for Morton's 50-year-old wife has not yet been scheduled. Sean David Morton, of course, has appeared and had appeared on Coast to Coast a number of times. If you're having trouble making calls or connecting to the internet on your cell phone today, you're not alone. Apparently all over the place, the providers from Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, and T-Mobile were having service issues all across the place. U.S. stocks closing higher as technology stocks recovered from a wobbly performance. Wow, they're staying strong. Well, the Food and Drug Administration has announced that the launch of an updated nutrition facts panel on foods developed during the Obama administration will now be delayed. The deadline for the food industry must comply with the new labeling will be pushed back for an undisclosed time. The new nutrition panel was designed to make it easier for you to see how many calories and added sugars a product contain. Our food safety coach, Jeff Nelkin, with us. Well, Jeff, why did they push this back?
Well, there seems to be some confusion in interpreting, you know, the guidelines that were being given. Some of the larger companies were able to jump on it faster than smaller companies. So there's just a lot of people having different opinions how to approach it. So I think they gave them an extra year of breathing time.
Do you think it's going to happen?
Yes.
Well, that's a good thing then. I guess we can wait a year, right?
Right.
All right, good. Thanks. Jeff Nelkin, food safety coach. A million years ago, it's a long period of time, but extreme volcanic activity most likely paved the way for the dawn of the dinosaurs, a study suggests. A million long years, scientists have analyzed ancient rocks and have found traces of emissions from huge volcanic eruptions that happened about 200 million years ago. And they said that created mass extinctions, enabling dinosaurs to become dominant. And then, of course, 63 million years ago, they were wiped out by the asteroids. NASA has provided an update on the Kepler Space Telescope's search for exoplanets, and they have now found more. That's 219 potential new planets. Pretty good stuff, Dr. Sky, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely, George, and it's just the beginning of great things to happen here with bigger and larger telescopes. Again, back in 1995, George, we became aware of exoplanets for the first time. And 50 years ago, we would be thinking that this is all the stuff of science fiction, but fascinating nonetheless. You know, today, George, as many people go about their business and into Tuesday, obviously on the calendar, it probably doesn't need much of a reminder out there, as much as the nation, and particularly here in Phoenix, we're living in literal hell with high temperatures. Summer solstice begins. That's the simple astronomical term. Today, George, 118 degrees Fahrenheit air temperature here in Phoenix. And just for the temperature world out there, some say the highest ever recorded temperature was like 134.1 degrees Fahrenheit in Death Valley back around 1913. But they only talk about air temperatures. And supposedly there, at one of the ranches, the Furnace Creek Ranch, right there in Death Valley back in 1972, a soil temperature was measured of, get a load of this, a 201 degrees on the Fahrenheit scale. But obviously, George, that leads us to talk about, hopefully, much more enticing things like the total solar eclipse, which we give updates each week. Some 63 days just to go, about 2 months, of course. 2 to 7 million people are actually going to visit this line of totality. Big things happening here. Last week, as we wrap up, we mentioned the number one drive shed location, meaning what big interstate is near what large city. The East Coast is the number one location. 75 million people, as I mentioned, along the I-95 corridor have a chance to see it. But the number two location for us in the West Coast is Idaho Falls, Idaho, George. This is the number two location with potentially 35 million people where I-15, Interstate 15, meets totality. We are planning our special Dr. Sky expedition, the Eclipse expedition, up to Rexburg, Idaho. We can talk much more about that in weeks to come. But most important, George, I want to leave the audience with this. You must, and I repeat, must have those solar glasses.
That's right.
Look at the partial phases because most people are not in totality. And finally, in the live sky, early morning risers on Tuesday, get a load of this. Look to the east. You will see the most magnificent conjunction, George, of Venus and the crescent moon. More questions if you'd like answered, email me at drsky@cox.net. And above all, always remember to keep your eyes to the sky.
And Stephen, if people look at the sun for a long time,
yes,
could they go blind? What could happen?
Yes, theoretically, George, they could, and permanent eye damage can occur. But what I want to make mention of, you obviously want to know that most of the nation, most of the part of the North America is not in totality. So there again, that warning that we're giving here on coast, you got to get ready and prepare because there's probably going to be a big rush on these solar glasses, which are very inexpensive, particularly for your children. You want to enjoy it. So, yes, you could have permanent eye damage for sure.
You got it. Thanks, Dr. Sky. In a moment, Jerry Corsi joins us as we talk about world events right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Jerry Corsi with us from Infowars.com as we talk about world events. We'll take your calls a little bit later on. Jerry, so many things happening. Oh, my God. How do we keep track of everything?
It's tough, George. Just even following the Syria conflict is very difficult to sort out. So we can take step by step through some of these and try to explain to people what's really going on.
Absolutely. And as we get into all of this, of course, you have switched over from WND. You are now with Infowars.com with Alex Jones. How's that transition for you?
First of all, I really enjoyed being. I was with WND for 12 years. It was a great 12 years. I'm very appreciative. I'm really looking forward to establishing the Washington News Bureau for Infowars. We're well along the way. I'll say probably in the next 2 months we'll begin hiring and staffing up, and I intend to be, you know, have InfoWars and Alex Jones be a real presence in Washington.
Boy, Alex sure made a lot of news the last couple of days, didn't he?
Well, I'll tell you, it was really something with the Megyn Kelly interview and all the publicity. It was a big boost in Alex's followers. I mean, there's already, you know, a huge number of people. There was something like 8 million during the months of the election that were following InfoWars on television, radio, internet, and there was a real spike in the people following InfoWars.com and Alex Jones because of the Megyn Kelly show. So if Megyn Kelly's idea was to suppress or, in other words, you know, hurt Alex Jones's viewers, it just backfired.
Yeah, if people didn't know who Alex was then, they sure do know who he is now.
It was a huge amount of national publicity on, you know, Sunday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, and it had 3.5 million viewers, many of whom I'm sure this was the first time they had any idea who Alex Jones was. And the spot did feature President Trump having been on Alex Jones' show twice during the election, and President Trump has said very favorable things about Alex Jones, and that point was made during the Megyn Kelly segment.
Well, as you know, too, Jerry, Alex and I go way back. In the beginning, I took a phone call many years ago from one of our listeners who said, hey, you got to have a guy named Alex Jones on the show. I didn't know who Alex was. So, you know, I got another call a little bit later on, same kind of thing, and I said, well, maybe I better check into this. So I did, and I said, you know what? I'm listening to this guy. I don't agree with all the things he says. That's what America's all about. But I like him. I like the fact that he goes out and gets real stories and then pushes and investigates. And so I put him on the show. And I would frankly say that he's been a regular guest on Coast to Coast for years now.
Well, Alex is a unique talent, and he's really a brilliant guy. I share a story with you, George. I don't think I've ever shared. I think it was 2005. I was coming back from New York. I had been on the Joey Reynolds show.
Uh-huh.
And you were asking Alex on Coast to Coast AM about me. I just really started to come out into national visibility and asking Alex what he thought of me. And Alex said, well, I think he's pretty good. And then right after that, you asked me to be on Coast to Coast.
That's how that grows, you know. And like I said, Alex and I don't agree with everything, but a lot of things he says have been taken out of context.
Well, and George, you know, this is one of the great, I think, strengths of your show. You don't necessarily agree with all your guests, but you bring them on so that the audience can be exposed to their viewpoints, and you can then let the audience decide what they want to believe or not believe. But the show is it's open forum, and you don't have to agree with everything that Alex Jones says, but his views are certainly challenging, and I think it's one of the major challenges to the legacy news, Alex Jones and InfoWars, that exists in the world.
Exactly. You know, he knows I call him the bulldog when he's on this show, and sometimes I have to pull that leash when he's on. And I say, Alex, come on. But, you know, his views on 9/11 have tempered a bit, have changed, where now he believes that 9/11 was caused by criminal elements within this country and with outside foreign governments. And he's probably getting closer to the truth with that theory, where in the beginning, you know, he thought it was, you know, the U.S. government per se, and then he's, you know, he tempered it as he looked at it. And the same thing with Sandy Hook. Yes, obviously, that was a tragedy. 20 kids and people died in that horrible situation. And I think Alex was taken out of context there, because I have heard him say that children died during Sandy Hook.
Well, in fact, it is in the interview that Alex said children died. I think the point that Alex is focused on and continues to is, you know, why do we have crisis actors? Why is there a profession and companies dedicated to crisis actors? And I think we have to ask these kinds of questions, because if we take just the traditional mainstream media or government interpretation of events, I mean, we did a shout out to Jim Mars, who's a great.
He's sick.
And my prayers are with Jim. I hope he realizes that. He's a great friend. I tremendously value his work. And Jim and I have known each other for years. But if he had not begun to question, and others, the Kennedy assassination, where would we be in terms of really understanding the power of government disinformation? And I think Alex Jones has been one of the real torch holders in exposing the whole idea of government propaganda and official explanations of events, which do need to be challenged.
Absolutely. And when things calm down for him, we'll get him on the program just so he can explain things from his perspective. So it's, you know, not a one-sided interview where he gets an opportunity to talk about his own real views. And so we'll do that. But
Alex Jones and you know, all of those followers for InfoWars.com will truly appreciate an opportunity for Alex to be on Coast to Coast AM and to really have an opportunity with you, George, to explain the views that he really holds.
Now let's talk about ISIS and Russia and Syria in the United States. Jerry, I got to tell you, I am so confused over this situation. And let me tell you where I'm confused as we approach the break. ISIS is holed up in Syria. It's where their headquarters are. As a matter of fact, Russia claims that they have killed Baghdadi, the head of ISIS, who is holed up in one of these compounds in Syria. We are supporting ISIS in Syria because we want Assad taken out, but this is the same ISIS that is creating terror all around this planet. I don't understand it.
Well, in fact, we probably gave birth to ISIS, and that's been an argument that's gone back and forth and been unsettled even in the presidential campaign, because I believe Donald Trump made that accusation at one point on the Obama administration. It was pushed back. The point is, we are fighting in part against ISIS and in part with ISIS, because ISIS is very complicated. We're officially fighting with the Syrian Democratic Forces, whoever they are, with the implicit goal and explicit goal of defeating ISIS. But, you know, many of the people we're supporting in the Syria battle, these Syrian Democratic Forces, are really Kurds who are another ethnic group in the north across Iraq, into Iran, and into Syria, into Turkey.
Into Turkey a lot. Stay with us, Jerry. We're going to be right back as we talk with you about world events. Jerry Corsi with us. He'll stick around for phone calls next hour on Coast to Coast AM as we keep him up late. He's over on the East Coast now. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And as you know, every couple times a month, we feature podcasters, people who are doing just a great job getting out their message podcasting. What, of course, is called We Don't Die. And Sandra Champlain puts it on. Listen to this.
They worked it so that eventually this dome would light up with a spirit light for anything up to 2 hours or more.
Oh, it's incredible. How did you feel? I can't even imagine when you first started witnessing some of this new phenomena sitting there.
Well, it was quite amazing. I mean, really, wow. You almost had to pinch yourself that you were seeing it. But it was quite 100% genuine. There's no doubt about it whatsoever. And, of course, I've got to the point now where I've been in this for over 40 years, where people say to me, well, you know, you've been involved in this 40 years plus. You must believe in life after death now. And I always say to them, no, I don't. And they look at me a bit askance. And I say, well, I know that it goes on. I know that it's genuine. And there's an awful difference between knowledge and belief.
Oh, that's a good distinction to know. Yes, there certainly is. Yeah, there's faith, there's belief, and then there's knowing.
And it's called We Don't Die. How great is it to have so many great podcasts out there with so many different things? Sandra, you're with us here. Great idea. How long have you been doing this, and how'd you come up with this concept?
Oh, well, hi, George. I've been doing this for just over 2 years. I started it after writing my book, We Don't Die,
yeah.
A Skeptic's Discovery of Life After Death. And then after that, I was doing a lot of shows myself being the guest, but I was missing a big part of me that loved to learn, and it was a lot big investment in reading people's books. And I thought, you know, if I could interview people for an hour, I would quench my thirst for knowledge. And then I thought, well, it's easy enough to share. I'll figure out how to do one of these podcasts. And lo and behold, I now have 182 episodes, 182 hours filled with unbelievable stories that just give you goosebumps, that, you know, life goes on. There's no doubt about it. And I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
For people who want to hear your podcast, how do they find you?
Well, if you go to WeDon'tDieRadio.com, that has the links. But if you're a YouTube user, just type in We Don't Die. Or if you use iTunes, just type in We Don't Die.
Super. Sandra, keep doing it and have some fun. Isn't that cool? All these great podcasters. Here's something else that's neat, and there's only 92 tickets left. Our live event, Saturday, July 29th at Everett, Washington. Plus, we're going to have a meet and greet right after for great guests. Robert Felix talking about the messed up weather. Sonia Grace on mystic healing. Space expert Mike Barra. Prophecy expert John Hoag. And so much more. Some secrets, too. Some music. Well, you'll figure it out when you get there. This is how you get your tickets. Go to coasttocoastam.com. Click the fourth highlight button. You'll see them there on the front page. And that'll open it up to the link. Or you can call this number, leave a message if you call now, if not, call during regular hours at 425-258-6766, 425-258-6766, or Google Historic Everett Theater. And welcome back to Coast. We are back with Jerry Corsi from Infowars.com. And Jerry, so many things to talk with you about. Let's finish up the ISIS discussion there. So this seems to be a quagmire. I mean, what happens now with their hold up in Syria? We kind of support that group. Russia wants them out. They're bombing them. It's a mess.
It's a total mess. The easiest way, I think, to understand Syria is that Russia and Iran are backing Assad, who is the government in Damascus. And the United States has opposed Assad in Damascus, and so does ISIS, suppose. They're against Assad. So in a sense, we're fighting with ISIS, but yet we're fighting against ISIS. And we're fighting against ISIS because we want to eliminate ISIS throughout the region, even though we support ISIS's desire to get rid of Assad. So our forces right now are united with what they call the Syrian democratic forces, which are largely the Kurds and other rebels, they're called, in Syria, opposed to Assad, who want to destroy ISIS. So it's really not fair to say we're fighting with ISIS, though in a sense we are, because ISIS opposes Assad, as do we.
There is a Catholic church somewhere in Aleppo, Syria, if it's still there, that has all my family records in the church.
Well, that's something. Aleppo, of course, is in the north northwestern part of Syria, north of Lebanon. And, of course, you know, all of these peoples in this the region are really very much tied together, and, you know, but yet different ethnically. That's the problem with the Middle East. It's every little region is so very complex. And Aleppo, of course, was almost destroyed. That was the scene of the fighting about a year ago, when Aleppo was where ISIS was holed out, and the U.S. was trying to get Aleppo free. And also at that point, Syria, the forces of Assad were fighting in Aleppo. Where this airplane went down is a little to the east of Aleppo, southeast, along the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, which run through Iraq into Syria, into Turkey. And, of course, Tigris and Euphrates are the cradle of civilization. This is where Mesopotamia was in ancient times. So the fighting is right now centered back in one of the cradles of where all Western civilization really sprung from.
Let's get into North Korea, if we can. I have felt, and you and I have been talking about this for weeks, that if there was one more missile test, something could happen. Now the death of this 22-year-old American, Otto Warmbier, is tragic beyond means. Jerry, John McCain said tonight they murdered him. I think he might be right.
Well, it has to be. John McCain has to be right about this one, because Warmbier came back brain dead. I mean, he was in a coma, and North Korea finally fessed up. The coma had lasted over a year. Now, what the cause of the coma was has not yet been medically disclosed, whether he was severely beaten or tortured or some chemical injection or what it was. I mean, I think North Korea came out with some very bizarre
botulism.
Botulism, they were saying, which was really kind of a bizarre explanation. I think it was likely a result of his severe treatment in imprisonment. And if you recall, when he was on trial, when Warmbier was on trial, he was actually crying and giving a confession.
Oh, it was just horrible to watch. It was so sad.
And he was a young man. He was in his early 20s, and all he did was
took a sign off a hotel room, right?
Right. He wanted to have a poster that he thought he would take back to college from North Korea, and it would be kind of interesting to have a North Korean poster.
Bring it to Kim Jong-un to sign, you know?
Right.
Hey, would you sign this for me, Kim? He probably would have.
Well, and it was, you know, it's kind of a college prank thing to do, to take the poster off the wall. And, of course, that was the offense.
15 years.
Right. Hard labor.
What's that? If some kid goes into the Ritz or Four Seasons Hotel or someplace in this country and takes a painting off a wall and starts walking out the door with it, are they going to give him 15 years for that?
No. I mean, first of all, it could be a criminal offense to be stealing property, and I'm sure there'd be repercussions. But for a college prank or a kid or, you know, someone who is really not maliciously meaning to engage in a major theft, I'm sure the authorities would figure out that this needed detention, but not necessarily 15 years of hard labor, which North Korea imposed on Warmbier. And it's clear to me that the conditions of his imprisonment had to be very, very severe, such that I'd expect that this brain coma resulted from some severe form of beating or other malnutrition or drugs or whatever the North Koreans did to him. But returning him now in this condition and having him die is not only heartbreaking, but it's now a major international incident.
They knew he was dying. That's why they moved him out.
Clearly, George, clearly. They didn't want him to die in prison, which would have been even worse. And now we've got even, you know, the president, the vice president, Vice President Pence made a statement on this yesterday or tonight, saying how sad he and his wife were in hearing this, and they're praying for the family. You know, a tragic example of North Korea's disregard for human life. This ramps up the tension because it shows, again, the brutality of this North Korean regime and the likelihood that if North Korea did develop and are developing nuclear weapons that were capable of being delivered by missiles to the United States, that we would face a severe threat from a regime like this Kim Jong-un, who's, I think, the third of this family that we've had to deal with as, you know, the rulers in North Korea.
Yeah, I thought his dad was bad. This kid is worse.
Well, it seems like, again, you don't have the same level, perhaps, of, you know, cleverness or intelligence. He's younger. He's more immature. He recently, pretty clear, killed one of the family.
He killed his half-brother at the airport.
At the airport. And brutally within North Korea has killed, and the people in North Korea are suffering horribly. Their malnutrition, the unemployment, the poverty. I mean, this regime has, for decades, been brutal to the people of North Korea. And the South Koreans are very prosperous. I mean, North Korea could be a very prosperous country if it weren't under this horrible communist regime.
Now, he's petrified, apparently, because he knows we can look at him with a spy telescope and send a drone and pluck him down and take care of him and just wipe him out. He's petrified. So he's traveling in other cars, not his Mercedes-Benz 600. Nice car, by the way. And he's getting up in the wee hours traveling. He's scared to death that we're going to take him out with some kind of SEAL team. And you know what? I think we just might.
Well, I think we just might, too. I'm sure it's been trained, and I'm sure it's been, game planned in terms of the military exercises. Look, going back to Ronald Reagan, who had an airstrike, if you recall, from Great Britain and bombed Gaddafi's tent, which surely rearranged Gaddafi's thinking. You know, this goes back into the 80s when Ronald Reagan was president. Today, with GPS technology, with the ability to track cell phones, with the incredible technology our U.S. military has, I think Kim Jong-un has a reason to be afraid. One wrong phone call, one wrong looking up of a direction in his automobile, and we have him targeted. So I think there's legitimate concern, especially after this kind of an incident and the regime continuing to fire ballistic missiles, continuing to develop nuclear weapons technology. North Korea is becoming a threat not only to the United States, but the entire region. Japan, South Korea, the entire region is threatened by North Korea right now.
What do you think Donald Trump is going to do? Because he's going to have to do something because of this. They murdered this 22-year-old.
My guess, having watched Donald Trump for decades, is that, first of all, he Donald Trump did in Syria when he launched a cruise missile attack.
An empty airport.
But he was trying to destroy the capability of that airport to be able to deliver a chemical attack again.
They used it the next day.
Yes, I know. I've often warned these things are not. Military action is always unpredictable and never goes as well as you think it's going to. But the point I was going to make is I think that Donald Trump would think to do a strike on North Korea, hopefully one that would be effective and accomplish the purposes, but not a war.
I would agree with that. And I think the strike should be a pinpoint to take him out wherever he may be. So if we know where his houses are, take them out.
That would be
Though he may not be there. At least take them out.
Well, in fact, Gaddafi survived the air attack that Ronald Reagan launched from England into Libya. But it certainly frightened him enough that he dropped his nuclear program. He changed direction.
That's right. And it sadly killed one of Gaddafi's wives and a child.
Yes, and that's, again, George, part of the problem of military action. When you're planning a military action and you're listening to the generals, it all sounds great. And, you know, once it goes into the field, nothing works the way you thought it was going to work. And it may or may not accomplish the purpose you think it's going to accomplish. So does a military strike on North Korea, if it doesn't succeed, only give North Korea justification for saying we're really the aggressors and their military program is now justified? These are the kinds of problems you face in really launching military action.
Well, something's going to happen. I just think President Trump, with all this pressure from Russia and the investigations, he's got to start acting presidential, and I think he's going to do something.
Well, it's, you know, the even just from the assessment of risk in, you know, California, the West Coast, in Hawaii,
I mean, Japan.
I mean, at some point or other, the calculation has to be made that you simply can't allow North Korea to continue to advance its nuclear technology, its nuclear weapons technology, because it's going to use it eventually. This is unpredictable rogue regime.
Yeah. Now, we have three more Americans trapped in North Korea of Asian descent. They are Americans. There's probably a concern about them, too, I would guess.
And I'm sure that the administration's efforts, you know, Trump's administration's effort to get those three Americans out of North Korea is now going to ramp up after this Wambir incident, because the danger is going to be obvious. So I think diplomatic pressure on North Korea is only going to intensify in the next few weeks. And I do believe that President Trump is learning that Washington is not New York, and being president is not like being a CEO. I remember from even when I was a teenager with my dad around Jack Kennedy and, you know, watching the administration, a great shock to any president, including Kennedy, was when you're president, how little power you really have. Because you would issue an order and the various agencies come in and say, well, Mr. President, we appreciate that, but, you know, there's this law and we have to follow this law, so we can't do what you say. And it's really a power, and then you deal with Congress. I mean, mm-hmm. Our Constitution was written so it's very difficult for any one branch of government to take decisive action unless the other two are in agreement. And our Founding Fathers did that intentionally because they were worried about imperial power, and they wanted to limit the power of the presidency. So each president, including Donald Trump, is going to have to learn how to use that limited power effectively.
I want to get your reaction to this mishap that took the lives of seven American sailors near Japan, where they collided with a ship flagged from the Philippines. The captain of the USS Fitzgerald is probably going to see a career ender here.
That's almost certain. I think any of these incidents, it won't happen immediately, but after a naval inquiry into the incident, I'm sure his career is going to be, shall we say, diverted in a different direction. It's still a very difficult to understand incident because, again, our ships are equipped with such sophisticated navigational gear that it's almost impossible to understand how they would have collided.
Well, and you would think that one of the commanders of each ship would have realized we're headed into a little problem here.
I would think so. I mean, you know, it's the incident reminded me, again, go back to Jack Kennedy when his, you know, you used to ask Jack Kennedy if he was a war hero, you know, and Jack Kennedy would say, yeah, well, I was, the Japanese ran over my boat.
The PT-109.
PT-109, Navy destroyer, Japanese Navy destroyer, cut through the PT boat, which, of course, was almost made like a balsa wood. I mean, it's a wooden boat. And I don't think the Japanese destroyer even recognized they ran into the PT-109. I mean, collisions at sea are always, can happen, are very frightening. And this incident, I don't understand why it happened.
No, I don't either. But I am convinced after being in the Navy 9 years, after
right.
The inquiry, this captain is going to see his career retired. And they may never get the answers to what happened here. It was tragic.
It is tragic. And it's a, you know, it reminds me also of Captain Queeg in the court, the Kane Mutiny court martial, that when you have a incident like this, the first suspicion is that was the captain competent?
That's right. Jerry, stand with us. We're going to keep you for an hour of phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.